مفاتی ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است که فلان نماز و ثواب داره فلان روزه هم است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فلان درختکاری اینجا کم ثواب داره. دعا هم داره، ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که این رو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دقیق ثواب داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدر گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون. این هم امام گفته دیگه.
When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned.
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی.
We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُحَيِّ الْمُتَعَفِّفِ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala loves a chaste, modest person. وَيُبْغِذُ الْبَذِيءَ السَّائِلَ الْمُلْحِفِ. And he hates a person who is vulgar in their language, of course, and also someone who asks in the sense of begging in that particular sense. شِيعَتِ Imam Ali alayhi salam, he also says, from among the descriptions of who a Shi'i is, Shi'ati men, so-and-so-and-so-and-so, لم يسأل الناس ولو مات جوعان. A Shi'i is someone who will never ask people, even if it means that they're going to die out of hunger. So from our side, as you know, people who want to be kind and nice and generous and pay sadaqah, we need to make sure that we accommodate to the needs of people. From the other side, someone who is in need, you know, inshallah, their risk will come to them. But if they get to that stage of begging, then of course that is where everything is going to fall apart for them. And that's why, you know, it's not something in any way endorsed or approved of socially or Islamically, especially in the case of you are not able to verify the genuinity of their cases. Now, when it comes to why we need to deal with the issue of beggars and these kind of things, there's a variety of ahadith that Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam speak about as far as why a person who does ask for money and they're not poor, why would they be, for example, seemed as being condemned in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? From Imam Sadiq salamullahi alayhi, it says, مَنْ يَسْأَلْ مِنْ غَيْرِ فَقْرٍ فَكَأَنَّمَا يَأْكُلُ الْجَمْرِ. Someone who asks, at the time not being poor, that it is like as if they are eating, they are consuming coal. Variety of other things can be mentioned about this, but we will leave it at that. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
In the limelight. The Retail, Wholesale and Department Store Union, RWDSU, has filed new precedent-setting charges of misconduct against Amazon with the National Labor Relations Board, NRLB, which previously ruled that the company violated the labor rights of its employees at the Bessemer warehouse in Alabama last year. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Mike Ludwig, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Union Files Precedent-Setting Charges of Misconduct Against Amazon. Here's the story. The Retail, Wholesale and Department Store Union, RWDSU, has filed new precedent-setting charges of misconduct against Amazon with the National Labor Relations Board, NRLB, which previously ruled that the company violated the labor rights of its employees at the Bessemer warehouse in Alabama last year. Bessemer workers are currently voting to whether to join a retail union for a second time after the NLRB determined that Amazon illegally interfered with a closely watched election in April 2021. The original union vote was unsuccessful, but organizing at a Bessemer warehouse and Amazon facilities in New York and Canada continued despite pushback from the retail giant. Removing union literature from break rooms, limiting workers' ability to talk with each other, compelling attendance at captive audience meetings to listen to anti-union messages, all of these actions expose Amazon's undisguised efforts to stifle workers' voices and to contempt for their right to join together, said Wilma Lipman, a former chairperson of the NLRB, in a statement provided by RWDSU. Amazon workers involved in organizing said the company took down pro-union flyers that they put up next to anti-union flyers during their unpaid time off, as they are allowed to do under labor laws. Roger Wyatt, a member of the organizing committee for workers, said workers were forced to attend training meetings with anti-union messaging. Being forced to attend the captive audience anti-union trainings was degrading, Wyatt said in a statement released by RWDSU. Amazon treated us like mindless robots, downloading misinformation to us, and the irony is these meetings are the longest I've ever gotten to sit at work. In a statement to Reuters, an Amazon spokeswoman said the company is confident that it has not broken labor laws. The company said, "Our focus remains on working directly with our team to make Amazon a great place to work." Meanwhile, local support for the Bessemer Union is strong. Nearly two-thirds of residents in Jefferson County, Alabama, say they support a union at the Amazon warehouse in Bessemer. A survey of 1,000 county residents released recently found that 62% supported a union at the warehouse, including 78% of black respondents and 79% of black women. About 85% of the Amazon warehouse's employees are black, and black workers are leading the union drive, according to the Institute for Policy Studies, a think tank that commissioned the survey. The survey released recently included broader questions about economic and social justice issues, along with questions about the union drive at the Amazon warehouse, a major employer in the area. The labor movement has traditionally struggled to build popular support and win union elections in the South compared to other regions, but nearly 50% of white respondents said they support a union at the massive Amazon warehouse. Mark Bayard, director of the Black Worker Initiative at the Institute for Policy Studies, said, "Even in the heart of the right-to-work U.S. South, there is amazing potential for an energized and revitalized labor movement to score major victories and improve the lives of Alabama workers. This survey shows that local community members stand with unionization efforts at Amazon facilities in Jefferson County, despite misinformation campaigns. Workers at Bessemer Warehouse can cast ballots in the current union election until late March. If enough workers vote to join the union, the warehouse will be the first Amazon facility to unionize in the country, potentially setting the stage for others to follow." Lipman added, "What's Amazon afraid of?"
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره، همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه الا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام ما أنقض النوم لعزائم اليوم.
Imam Ali alayhi salam stated, What a breaker is sleep for resolutions of the day.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Dear friends, from the universal persona of Imam Ali, we continue to learn so many different things. It is quite beautiful and it is quite amazing that even after the passing of over 1,000 and so years, the words of Imam Ali are very much applicable to today and are very much applicable to the present time. Now, one of these beautiful moral, ethical, and lifestyle stances or lifestyles that Imam Ali alayhi salam has taught us is this idea that the people should be at ease from us. Now, the tradition itself goes as such. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "A believer makes himself suffer, but the people are at ease with them." So just to explain this a little bit, a believer makes himself suffer, meaning I think if we put it into practical terms, it might make more sense. So for example, there is a hardship that you take upon yourself, but on the other hand, you let the people be at ease. So let's say, for example, you're going on a trip, and on this trip there are a few families with you who are also going on the same trip. Now, instead of handing over your own luggage for them to carry, you go out of your way and you carry some of their luggage. Now, what is happening here is that you are making yourself suffer, for lack of a better word. You're putting yourself in hardship, but you're doing this in order to put other people at ease. And so if every single one of us did this, wouldn't we live in a more perfect life? So for example, if every single one of us took up a little more hardship, a little more difficulty, but it made the lives of other people easier, we really would live in a much better, more perfect world. And so as Imam Ali alayhi salam says, a mu'min, a believer, makes themselves suffer and makes themselves go through hardship, but the people are at ease with them. A beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. كل صبح وكل اشراق ايام تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاق ايام قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafiya. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, take care to provide well for your future abode. Do not barter away eternal blessing for pleasures of this mortal and fleeting world. Do not talk about things which you do not know. Do not speculate about and pass verdicts on subjects about which you are not in a position to form an opinion and are not called upon to do so. Give up the way where there is a possibility of your going astray. When there is danger on your wandering in the wilderness of ignorance, possibility of losing the sight of the goal which you want to attain and of reaching the end aimed at, then it is better to give up the quest than to advance facing uncertain dangers and unforeseen risks. Advise people to do good and live virtuously because you are fit to give such advice. Let your words and deeds teach the world lessons of how to abstain from wickedness and vicious deeds. Try your best to keep away from those who indulge in vices and sins. Fight whenever required to defend the cause of Allah. When you think of defending the cause of Allah, do not be afraid that people will laugh at you, censure your action, or slander you. Fearlessly and boldly help truth and justice. Bear patiently the sufferings and face bravely the obstacles which come in your way when you follow truth and when you try to uphold it. Adhere to the cause of truth and justice wherever you find it. Try to be well-versed with Islamic jurisprudence and theology and acquire a thorough knowledge of the canons of this religion.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
We are on two sides. Either you love Ali ibn Abi Talib or you hate Ali ibn Abi Talib. That's if you know Ali ibn Abi Talib. And that is why we find a hadith from our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. أَنَّهُ قَالْ لِعَلِيٍ يَا عَلِي لَا يُحِبُّكَ إِلَّا مُؤْمِنٍ وَلَا يُبْغِذُكَ إِلَّا مُنَافِقٍ. He says, oh Ali, no. That those who love you, that is a sign of iman. Yeah? And for those who hate you, that is a sign of nifaq, hypocrisy in their hearts. Now, we need to look before we describe what is it about Imam Ali alayhi salam that makes him loved and hated at the same time so much, we need to have an introduction to understand this whole idea or this concept of this jazibiyah, as it is known in Arabic, this attraction. I don't have love for the person who curses Ali ibn Abi Talib. How? You tell me you have love for these people? The people who bomb and kill innocent Muslims and Shias in Sham, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan. I say I have love for them? Let us look everything past? No. This is not Islam. Islam wants you to take a line and take a stance and say that I will not love these type of people, and rather I will show and pray against these type of people. Now, when I meet these people, how will I behave? Naturally, the akhlaq of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam has to be maintained. Yeah? Has to be maintained, my brothers and sisters. I'm not saying we show no akhlaq to them. But in my heart, I have no room for these people. And I will not hang out with these people. I will not show friendship to these people unless they begin to change their way. Yeah? So this is the second group of people. People who only have the power of attraction. Then there's a third group of people. The third group of people are people who only have the power of repulsion. You meet them and you want to run away from them. They don't know how to talk. They don't know how to do anything. These are the people who don't have friends, don't make friends, and don't want friends. They would rather be all by themselves. In fact, these are the people who have no akhlaq. Because if they had an ounce of akhlaq, people would be willing to spend some time with them. But these are people who absolutely do not have the characteristic and the conduct of the Ahlul Bayt, and these are the people who we should avoid. There's a hadith which comes from our first Imam Amirul Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, annahu qal, a'ajazu an-nasi man 'ajaza 'anil iktisab al-ikhwan. The weakest of man is he who is too weak to attract a friend, he says. It's the weakest of man. He is too weak to even attract somebody to become his friend. And then he continues, وَأَعْجَزُ مِنْهُ مَنْ ضَيَّعَ مَنْ ظَفِرَ بِهِ مِنْهُمْ. And still weaker is the one who loses friends and becomes isolated. Why? Because they have no akhlaq. Yeah? You don't want to spend time with them. Why would you want to spend time with them? Somebody who doesn't treat you well. So these are the people who absolutely repel everybody else.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
He says that I get this tawfiq and chance to start offering this tafsir, and I wanted to conduct a kind of tafsir which is going to be beneficial for the ordinary people and lay people.
He tries to emphasize the ethical points of tafsir. That's why we may say that this tafsir is an akhlaqi exegetic book.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Surely we've wronged ourselves. What will we say in front of it?
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is The Teacher. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Mahdavi and Shaykh Ziyaniya. Shaykh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So, as our dear listeners might know, the program The Teacher is about the life and works of the most outstanding Muslim, especially Shiite dignitaries all across the nation of Islam around the world on different fields of studies regarding Islamic studies. And for today's discussion, we want to talk about a Shiite alim and a scholar of the 14th century. According to the solar calendar, he is no one but Muhammad Saghafi Nuri, also known as Mirza Muhammad Saghafi Tehrani. Shaykh Ziyaniya, let's start with you, brother. Give us some information about the biography and the early life of Mirza Muhammad Saghafi Tehrani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ayatollah Mirza Muhammad Saghafi Tehrani was born in 1273 solar calendar in Tehran. And he moved to Qom in 1341 in lunar calendar, and studied for 7 years in Qom. And after that, he moved again to Tehran. And he stayed in Tehran the rest of his life up to his demise. And he was amongst those scholars that dedicated his life to live amongst people and to be imam of a mosque and to have preaching Islam amongst ordinary people and, you know, among those people who are involved in ordinary, you know, jobs like merchants and some people like this.
Okay.
And it's important to know that Ayatollah Mirza Muhammad Saghafi Tehrani was the student of Mirza Kuchak Savoji and also Sayyid Abu al-Hasan Rafi Ghazvini. And the most important teacher of him is the late Sheikh Abdul Karim Ha'iri Yazdi, the great alim who established Islamic Seminary of Qom.
The founder of Islamic House of Qom, that's right. Okay.
And also Sheikh Muhammad Saghafi Tehrani achieved the permission of ijtihad, that, you know, certification from Sheikh Abdul Karim Ha'iri Yazdi and also Sheikh Muhammad Rza Isfahani.
That's right.
So this is the brief of his background.
Okay, that's right. As you said, he was very much related to the socio-political and religious scene of Iran, both before the Islamic Revolution and after the Islamic Revolution of Iran. And one of his daughters has become the wife of the late Imam Khomeini. The late Khadija Saghafi, you know, the daughter of this outstanding man and the wife of the late Ruhollah Khomeini, mainly known as Imam Khomeini. Okay, Sheikh Mahdavi, let's talk a little bit about the specific fields of study. I mean, the fields of interest of Ayatollah Saghafi Tehrani. What are they?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Regarding Ayatollah Saghafi Tehrani, we have to say, as my brother mentioned, he benefited from the great scholars like Abdul Karim Ha'iri. And besides him, we can mention the name of Ayatollah Shah Abadi, who is really famous as the teacher of akhlaq or ethics. This is actually the technical term that we have in Hausa, or it's actually something famous among the Muslims to go and follow one specific teacher who is qualified and eligible for educating and giving instruction on akhlaq.
That's right.
So he was benefiting from the presence of Ayatollah Shah Abadi, that everybody, most of the at least Iranian, know that Ayatollah Shah Abadi also was the teacher of akhlaq for Imam Khomeini as well. Imam Khomeini was. And this is also very interesting that Ayatollah Shah Abadi was giving his lessons on akhlaq all days of the week. So they were participating in his class, and this is also narrated that Ayatollah Thaqafi Tehrani was also taking part in his private class. So in field of study, we can say most of the Hausevi or typical field of studies that students of the seminary will take and get to the high levels, he mastered, like jurisprudence, fiqh, philosophy, kalam, and exegesis, or tafsir al-Qur'an.
That's right.
For the last one, we have one of the actually famous tafsir that we have, at least in Iran, is Ravan-e Javid, which is conducted by him in five volumes.
Okay.
And it's a kind of simplifying what we have in Tafsir al-Safi, which is conducted by Feyz-e Kashani almost 200 years before him. So he is saying that I actually wanted to dedicate my life to Quran, and I couldn't get chance. But when he is almost 43 years old, he says that I get this tawfiq and chance to start offering this tafsir.
Okay.
And I wanted to conduct a kind of tafsir which is going to be beneficial for the ordinary people and lay people. And as my brother said, for the scholar, when he reaches this level, and then he moves back to his hometown, and he stays in the local, among the actually lay people, in one of the oldest traditional neighborhood and district in Tehran, which is Pamanar.
That's
this is actually one
A famous neighborhood in Tehran.
Yes, which includes many tourism sites as well.
Yes, yes.
So he stayed there till the end of his life. Mm-hmm. It shows how he was really interested in dedicating his life to the very important issue of tabligh and preaching religion among the ordinary people.
That's all right.
This is one of the advantage of him.
One of the most important people and the revivers of the Hausa in the city of Tehran. Most of the people might think that Tehran has no Hausa or a school or seminary one, but you know, Tehran has, you know, schools and different scholars are over there. He was also famous for compiling poetic collections or composing poems, you know, on the Ahlul Bayt, you know, and this made him great. But he is known with his tafsir, which is called Ravan-e Javid, by Mirza Muhammad Saqafi Tehrani. Give us some details about this tafsir or the exegesis of the Holy Quran by him.
As my dear brother Sheikh Mahdavi mentioned, this tafsir is somehow a simplified version of tafsir marhum Mullah Feyz Kashani.
Tafsir as-Safi.
That is named Tafsir as-Safi.
Yes.
And you know, the method of Tafsir as-Safi is somehow putting ahadith and also, you know, historical events and also the some reasonings. He's trying to put these all together to give, you know, the clarification for the verses.
Okay.
So it's not only relying on ahadith, but also relies on other...
You mean historical and social facts?
Yes.
The
trying
background.
To put these facts together.
Okay.
But the mainstream is rivayat in Tafsir Mullah, in Tafsir as-Safi.
Okay.
The mainstream is rivayat. So that's why Marhum Thaqafi Tehrani decided to clarify this tafsir.
That's right.
First of all, because it was amongst the most recent tafsir that he had, you know, was in, you know, his achievement.
Yes.
So was the amongst the newest one.
Yes.
And beside that, he says that because this tafsir was relying on ahadith and also mentioning other points, that's why I chose this tafsir to simplify and clarify it for ordinary or lay people to get more benefits from the Holy Book of Quran. And
What is his main approach in this tafsir?
Yes. We may say that there are some good points, or we may say there are some, you know, interesting points regarding this book. That is, first of all, because he wanted to give a book and clarify this book for lay people, for ordinary people, he tries to emphasize the ethical points of tafsir.
Okay.
That's why we may say that this tafsir is an akhlaqi exegetic book.
So you mean an exegesis of the ayahs of the Quran, but with an ethical or, especially, educational approach?
Yes.
Okay.
Another important point is that he is trying also to mention some fiqhi or jurisprudential issues. Besides this, he tries, because Tafsir As-Safi, the main tafsir that Marhum Saqafi Tehrani is trying to simplify, is a narrative tafsir somehow.
Yes. Okay.
So Marhum Saqafi Tehrani is trying to put those ahadith that at first they seem to be in conflict with each other. Mm-hmm. He tries to put these ahadith under the same umbrella.
That's right.
And to show that there is no conflict between this riwayat, in a way that they all are in the same, stream, and they are giving the same message to the audience.
That's right.
And another important point is that the text of the book, the sentences, they are simple, but they are easy understanding, but they are not giving simple issues. They are trying to give, important points, but in a way that is easy for, ordinary people to be understood.
You mean sophisticated concepts, but in simple words?
Yes.
Okay, this is what usually, the most outstanding ulama have tried to do. In the later centuries, we could find it on the exegesis of the Holy Quran, on Ahkam, on Etaqadat, and on different topics. When the simplified versions is out, usually there are sophisticated concepts and contents, but the language is simple to understand. Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
And the last point that we should mention regarding this tafsir is that this tafsir is not a long one. Mm-hmm. It's in 5 volumes.
Yes.
So we all know that a tafsir in 5 volumes is not a big one, because we have tafsir about 30 volumes, 40 volumes, more or less.
Yes.
So this tafsir is counted amongst those ones that may be used by ordinary people. Mm-hmm. So it's not, going into very, crucial details and to, bring the audience some sort of confusion that what is the last deduction and what is the last point that the author is trying to mention. For example, when you refer to Tafsir Fakhrul Razi, he is giving different type of aqwal or, points. So in a way that the ordinary people, normal people, they may face with confusion that, okay, what is your last point? So Tafsir Rawan Jawid is not trying to put the audience in confusion. He's trying to simplify the stuff as it is possible for the author.
Very good. This is what the public needs, simple to understand and easy to understand tafsir of the Quran. Okay, Sheikh Mahtavi, anything about Rawan Jawid tafsir of the Holy Quran?
Okay, I may have some contribution to what my brother just said, as the approach that you asked for. We may add this as well, that he is saying that I was trying to compose or conduct a tafsir on the Quran, but for the reason Quran has revealed for, and that is the guiding the believers.
The book Hidayatul, of guidance.
Yes, Hidayatul Muttaqin. So I was trying to mostly include these points, which have kind of relation with the guidance of Muttaqin, or the believers. So this is another aspect of the approach that he has taken in his tafsir that I think we have to mention.
That's right.
But another aspect of his life is the poetry, composing poems. We have to say, I think it's not fair to ignore this part of his life, that he was really passionate poet when it would come to the position of Ahlul Bayt. We have a very nice poetry on Imam Ali, which is called Qasideh Ghadiriyeh.
That's right.
He is starting like this. Actually, this is in Farsi, but I think our audience can get the notion of this poetry, which says, Ali Vasiy Rasul, Ali ist Zawj Batul, Abul Aimo bar Mu'minan Yegan Amir, Ali Vali, Ali Vali, Ali Mawla, Ali ist Saqi Kawsar Qasim Khuldo, Sa'ir.
Sa'ir, that's right.
And another poetry that he has composed on Lady Ma'suma. And he has called the poetry as the second Fatima.
Fatima Sani.
Yes, Fatima Sani.
That's right.
Yes, second Fatima. And this is also nice that I actually recommend our audience to go and look it up and benefit and enjoy this poetry.
That's right. That's all right. Really beautiful poems regarding Imam Ali alayhi salam, Hazrat Ma'suma, and the other members of the Ahlul Bayt, you know, poetic collections of Mirza Muhammad Saghafi Tehrani. It was very kind of you. Thank you much, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziya Inia, for your presence in the program. The teacher talking about Mirza Muhammad Saghafi Tehrani, the author of Ravane Javid, Exegesis of the Holy Quran. It was very kind of you. About his demise, it's mentioned that it was Al-Qa'da 22nd, 1405. According to the lunar Hijra calendar, he passed away in the city of Tehran. Mirza Muhammad Saghafi Tehrani, the author of Ravane Javid, Exegesis of the Holy Quran, also the father of the late Khadija Saghafi, the wife of the late Imam Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us, the program, The Teacher, on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Call of Islam. Also, our YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode and introducing another Shia dignitary, God bless you all. Fi aman Allah.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
North Korea says it launched a missile on Sunday as part of developing a reconnaissance satellite system. The North has not elaborated on the type of rocket used in the test, but authorities in South Korea say it appeared to be a ballistic missile, fired from an area near Pyongyang toward the sea off its east coast. The launch was the eighth this year and the first since the end of January, when North Korea fired off a record number of projectiles, including its longest-range ballistic missile since 2017. North Korea has ramped up its missile testing in 2022, announcing plans to bolster its defenses against the United States and evaluating restarting all suspended military activities. North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un had previously stated that his country's weapons development is necessary for self-defense in the face of hostile policies from the United States, including sanctions and joint military drills with South Korea. The North has also vowed to strengthen its nuclear capabilities by building more powerful atomic weapons. The exact size and strength of North Korea's nuclear arsenal are unclear. Some estimates say North Korea could have around 200 nuclear weapons by 2027. Pyongyang is believed to have tested nuclear weapons several times. It has also tested ballistic projectiles capable of reaching the United States. But why does North Korea need this expanding military program?
They learned their lesson, in essence. They learned that the United States can't be trusted, and it is willing to commit just horrific crimes against the Korean people to secure its own interests. And so North Korea doesn't want to end up the same way that Iraq is, the way Palestine is, the way Afghanistan is, because of U.S. involvement, U.S. intervention.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command said it was consulting with its allies, South Korea and Japan, about the latest test. The command said in a statement that the U.S. condemns the launch and calls on North Korea to refrain from further, quote, destabilizing acts. Following a series of North Korean missile launches, the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has imposed sanctions against Pyongyang. Washington has also called on the Security Council to take action against several North Korean individuals and entities accused of violating resolutions that ban North Korea's projectiles and nuclear weapons development. North Korean citizens continue to suffer because of the sanctions. The World Food Program has estimated that 10.1 million North Koreans are suffering from food shortages. Also, the UN has acknowledged that the US-backed sanctions were at least partly responsible for North Korea's food and medicine shortages.
The US sanctions against Korea have been devastating. It has significantly hurt the living standard of the people in North Korea. But with that in mind, they have pushed forward. They have continued on despite the difficult situation that they've been dealt because of U.S. foreign policy. You see that in their scientific advancements. You see that in their rebuilding of the nation after the Korean War. And you're seeing that now as they continue since the Trump administration continue to build newer and improve upon previous models of nuclear warheads.
Despite the sanctions, North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un is pursuing a plan for developing weapons that included hypersonic weapons, spy satellites, solid-fuel intercontinental ballistic missiles, and submarine-launched nuclear projectiles. Kim has intensified expanding his country's military capabilities since his diplomacy with former United States President Donald Trump ended without an agreement in 2019.
Well, I certainly hope that the U.S. is serious about improving relations, but I highly doubt it. I think perhaps the first thing that could be done is the U.S. removing its forces from South Korea, because you have to recognize that in a lot of ways, the Republic of Korea, or South Korea, is just a staging ground for U.S. and NATO forces to be right there on the demilitarized border of North Korea. And so if the U.S. is serious about improving relations, it should, in my opinion, completely withdraw from South Korea, all forces.
Trump took unprecedented steps by initiating several rounds of dialogue with the North. However, Washington blew what Pyongyang called a golden opportunity. The United States, Britain, Europe, and Canada moved to block certain Russian banks' access to the SWIFT international payment system as part of more sanctions against Moscow as it continues its military operation against Ukraine.
We are resolved to continue imposing massive costs on Russia, costs that will further isolate Russia from the international financial system and our economies.
The measures, which will also include restrictions on the Russian Central Bank's international reserves, will be implemented in the coming days.
We will paralyze the assets of Russia's central bank. This will freeze its transactions, and it made it impossible for the central bank to liquidate assets.
Von der Leyen said removing Russia from SWIFT will paralyze Russia's international trade and effectively stop its imports and exports. Earlier, Berlin announced it has agreed to limit Moscow's access to SWIFT as well. The SWIFT system is a Belgian cooperative that offers many services in assisting businesses and individuals to complete seamless and accurate business transactions. Western countries have joined the chorus as well. The U.S. says Western nations will also impose restrictive measures on the Russian Central Bank to prevent it from deploying its international reserves in ways that undermine the impact of sanctions. But how much damage will these sanctions have on the fragile global economy? The sanctions add to the economic impact of this crisis and will transmit primarily through energy prices as well as grain prices. Russia and Ukraine supply crops to a long list of countries around the world, including large volumes to buyers in the Middle East and Africa. Sanctions will also add to a growing concern of inflation. This could throw the EU economy into mayhem or even negatively affect Russia's gas supplies to Europe. The EU is Russia's biggest trade partner. Nearly 38% of Russia's exports went to the EU, while over 36% of Russia's imports came from Europe. Russia is also the origin of 26% of the EU's oil imports and 40% of the EU's gas imports. The world energy market and commodities have been affected and will continue to witness price surges, especially when it comes to oil. On Thursday, oil prices briefly topped $100 for the first time since 2014. The US and several of its allies, including the European Union and the United Kingdom, have vowed to impose further restrictions on Moscow as punishment. In total, the sanctions will keep approximately $1 trillion in Russian banking assets from flowing through the markets of the US and its partners' financial systems. The sanctions also limit tech exports to Russia and squeeze the country's tech industry. Those sanctions are the main foreign policy tool of Americans. The effectiveness of this tactic is debated. The sanctions already announced are significant in size and scope, but the long-time American reliance on sanctions has left the US with few other options if Russia does not respond. Experts say Russia's sanctions are a big deal, but it could take quite a while, even years, for the sanctions to hurt the Russian economy.
They think they can destroy Russia and China by cutting them off. They cannot. It's a false dream. And it, unfortunately, if they continue, it probably will lead to war, perhaps nuclear war, and the annihilation of the human race.
Russian officials dismiss Western sanctions as ineffective. Russia's GDP has grown yet at a slow rate since the West imposed financial sanctions on Russia in 2014. The country's officials also point to low inflation, the minimal budget deficit, a public debt of only 18% of GDP at the end of 2020, steady current account surpluses, and international currency reserves of $596 billion at the end of 2020. Russians have got used to sanctions and therefore adapted their economy to them.
Almost 2 years after African American George Floyd died beneath the knee of a white police officer on a street in Minneapolis, the police officers involved are being brought to account. A federal jury has found three former officers present at the scene of Floyd's arrest guilty of depriving the man of his civil rights. The jury found the conduct of the three officers led to Floyd's death, a charge that would impact the final verdict the officers will face. The three are convicted of failing to stop Derek Chauvin, who knelt on Floyd's neck for about 9 minutes, and denying Floyd's constitutional right to medical care while in custody. Tu Tao, Alexander Kwang, and Thomas Lane will remain free on bail until their hearings, which aren't scheduled yet. What's for certain is that they'll face several years in prison. Chauvin, the officer arresting Floyd, was sentenced to 22 and a half years last year. For Floyd's family, it's not enough.
This is just accountability. It can never be justice because I can never get George back. And no matter how many times that I pray at night and I think about my brother 24/7, it still is going to be hard, even though we just had a federal conviction and we already had the state conviction. But times, you know, will be probably a lot harder for me still because I can't get my brother back.
The trials are considered historic in the U.S., where officers are hardly ever indicted for the treatment of the members of the black community. Racism in the United States dates back as long as its history. African Americans have suffered tremendous atrocities at the hands of white slave owners over the years, and the impact it made on American society.